This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, December 24, 2004, at KPFA in Berkeley. I'm Deepa Fernandes. As the Christian world prepares to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ tomorrow, residents of the Holy Land are still waiting for peace. We bring you a special documentary looking at the Palestinian struggle for self-determination and survival at this critical juncture before their national election next month. Please stay with us. Palestinians are facing increased pressure of the occupation, resulting in a continuation of Israeli policies of land confiscation, restrictions on movement, home demolitions, and the denial of access to healthcare, education, and community. In this half-hour documentary produced by FSRN correspondent Sarah Olson, we hear the stories of Palestinians living in the West Bank, their experience of occupation, and what they're doing to challenge the situation.
Yasser Arafat's death on November 10, 2004, left Palestinians in mourning. While international leaders like George Bush and Ariel Sharon say there is now a possibility for real and lasting peace between Israel and Palestine, Palestinians are more cautious. For now, they are mourning their leader's death, celebrating his life, and acknowledging his shortcomings. They say what deeper changes emerge in the region over time depend not on the failed Mideast peace plan or a new Palestinian leader. It depends on a commitment to justice.
Arafat, he's a normal man, and he's also the president of the Palestinian people. He was elected. Everybody say that we want our freedom and we want our state. So Arafat, he's part of the Palestinians who are struggling for their future, for their independence, for their freedom.
I want to see the Palestinian flags and everywhere in my country, like what Yasser Arafat said. I want to be that woman who's holding the Palestinian flag in Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Inshallah, we hope that it will be realized.
Arafat is the architect of Palestinian awareness, and he led the way toward a Palestinian state, which we have not yet achieved. But he is an important figure in helping to establish the foundation leading to the realization of Palestinian sovereignty.
Of course, we feel sorry, but this is not the end of our life. We hope that we will have election and we will choose another leader and we will have a new leadership in Palestine here who can end this occupation forever.
I don't think that the death of Yasser Arafat will make that big change. And that's why I don't think that there is a large or big opportunity for what's so-called peace. Because Arafat was for sure pro this form of peace, which I call it, you know, peace for capital, not peace for peoples.
We hope that peace will be realized for us and the people of Israel. But we want a just peace for our people, which means adhering to our basic tenets of right of return, right to self-determination, and an independent state, including East Jerusalem as the capital. President Arafat will remain an icon and the leader of the Palestinian people. We offer all of our respect and appreciation for his ability to bring us to where we are today. He made the world recognize the Palestinian people as a people with a right to its own independent state, not a people without a national identity. I hope that whichever government leads us in the future will remain true to these principles and not do away with them.
Mordechai Vanunu is an Israeli nuclear whistleblower, just released after 18 years in prison for revealing documents proving Israel's nuclear capability and development. He is currently living in East Jerusalem. He says the occupation has increased in severity during his time in prison.
The situation now has become much more worse and bad. Israel with Sharon conquered again all these places and make worse than ever before, assassinating leaders using the army F-16 helicopters for assassination,
The occupation become much more real, worse by this checkpoint and especially by the wall, isolating villages and many parts and putting Palestinians like in prison, separating families, separating school. A real nightmare for the Palestinians. So the occupation out is very worse. And I don't know and how I cannot understand how the Israelis can speak about peace, or anyone can believe them they want peace with this wall and this checkpoint and Israel army in every city of the Palestinians. And it's very bad that all the world not doing anything, not United States, not Europe, no China, no anyone.
Palestinians are facing increased pressure under the tightening grip of occupation. Many point out that the situation facing Palestinian farmers in the West Bank is just one example of the systematic restrictions facing Palestinians each day. The produce market in the city of Tulkarm is lively and plentiful as vendors call out the prices of their fruits and vegetables to people shopping for the evening's dinner. From planting season to harvest and transporting produce to market, the story of agriculture in Palestine is one of obstacles and struggle. Musa Odeh is a farmer and student living in the village of Kfar Tulith near the city of Qalqilya.
The sections of the wall they are building in this region are in the north and in the west. As a result, the Israelis have taken or stolen much of our lands, about 6,000 dunams, which make about 1,500 acres. Remember, this is not the first time. Before 1948, our town's land extended up to Jeljulia inside the Green Line. The residents came here after the Israelis chased them out. Then, in 1967, the Israelis followed them here. And now, the wall does the work for them. People here farm olives. All the land that is lost is planted with olive trees. There are some people who used to produce about 1,000 gallons of olive oil per year. Their lands are lost completely.
If it's true that land is at the heart of the Palestinian-Israeli struggle, then farming villages are on the front lines. The story of this struggle begins before the planting of the first seed, with the requirement that Palestinians living near the wall obtain a permit from Israeli authorities to work on their land.
The Israelis declare to the world that they facilitate entry for the Palestinians to harvest olives. In reality, there is no such thing. For example, in my family, there are five brothers and my father and mother. We all went to the liaison office to get permits to work on our land. But the Israeli authorities only issued one permit to my youngest brother, who could do no work on his own. They denied permits to the rest of us.
The wall is not the only barrier farmers experience. There are four settlements surrounding Kfar Tulith. According to Musa Odeh, the settlers work hard, denying farmers access to their land.
They destroy the land. The impact of the settlers is devastating. We are farmers and we depend on the land for our income. There is nothing more frustrating than olive trees, which we have planted 20 years ago and which are in full bloom and full health, being destroyed by the settlers. There is nothing more crushing. The first time the settlers came, they cut down the trees. The second time they came, they uprooted the trees altogether. And the third time they came, not only did they cut down the trees, but they put chemicals on the base of the trees so they could never be planted again.
For farming villages like Kfar Tulith, nestled in the rolling hills of what's known as the breadbasket of the region, the isolation caused by the wall and the settlements is devastating.
We live only because death is in short supply. The angel of death has not yet come to claim our souls. That's why we live. In other words, we live the life of the wretched. Before the Intifada, things were better. Now, people live in extremely miserable conditions. Once in a while, aid arrives from the Gulf countries and helps a little. The Red Cross also provides assistance. UNRWA provides flour, which it distributes to people. Some people may have remaining olives, some may have a goat, while others may only have chips to eat. It's all from hand to mouth.
Budrus is another agriculture-based village that has been impacted by the construction of the wall. The wall was slated for construction deep inside the 1967 Green Line, as it is in many areas around the West Bank, threatening to cut villagers off from their ancestral farmland. In Budrus, the community organized over 50 nonviolent demonstrations against the wall and succeeded in pushing it back to the 1967 Green Line.
We are the people of Budrus. We hold many demonstrations against the wall, and all of us wanted to stop the bulldozer.
El Tazan Marar helped organize young women in Budrus. She gave me a tour of the land near the wall.
And one day in one demonstration, we were like under this tree and soldiers were over there surrounding us. So my uncle was throwing stuff over there and they hold him and he had like a lot of blood in his face. So we were very scared. So that we saw lots of shabab getting shot. And like the olive trees were like falling because of the rubber bullets, so it was falling on us. But mostly after that, the soldiers start to shoot the people from this land.
In the back, we can hear the sound of the construction of the wall. I'm wondering what it's like to, you know, have the sound of the construction kind of day and night.
It's like something digging in your mind. It's always remember us that they are destroying the land and our land is going. That's always what we remember.
Before we finished talking, soldiers arrived and chased us out of the Marar family olive orchards. El Tazan says she struggles not just for the olive trees on her family's land, but also for freedom.
If Palestine become free, and it will be free, I will be able to visit every place in Palestine. Freedom, like, I want to go to everywhere in the world, and they've told me who you are. I told them I'm a Palestinian. So I want to free state. Like, I want Palestine to become free. I want to belong to a free country.
Dr. Hanan Atiri works as general director of the health department and is coordinator of the health committees in the city of Nablus. In addition to impacting agriculture, the closure of the West Bank affects the interaction between urban and rural areas. Atiri says this is most evident when looking at the healthcare sector.
First of all, that Nablus and other governorates are under concrete siege. So this is the most important problem, that most of the sick people, especially the people who have chronic diseases, cannot reach to hospitals or even to their clinics because of the checkpoints, because of the hard time facing on the checkpoints. And because of this, we lost many of our patients, actually, especially those who have renal problem like dialysis, or the people who have heart attacks or something like this. Also, pregnant women are facing problems on checkpoints.
Over 50 children have been born amidst the noise and the clamor of checkpoints in the West Bank and Gaza. Several of these children have died. Ahlam lives near Jerusalem and has been denied the necessary identification to pass through checkpoints. She says this makes any sort of travel impossible and is concerned about lacking adequate health care during her current pregnancy.
We stand at the checkpoint, totally helpless, not knowing what to do. When he tells me to leave, I have to leave. The other day, the children had the term exams. I explained to him that the children needed to get to the school, but he wouldn't budge. My son was crying, so I begged the soldier to make an exception this time, but no way. I feel very frustrated. The children start crying. They feel there is something truly fearful. Amal, for example, tells me, "Mama, they can keep you from coming to us." Feeling helpless, the only thing left to do is go around the mountain. It is very difficult, but I have no choice but to find a road to reach home. I am now pregnant and in my term. I keep wondering what will happen if we get to a checkpoint when I am about to give birth and they order me to turn back. What will I do?
Dr. Ghassan Hamdan, director of the Palestinian Medical Relief Society in Nablus, agrees that checkpoints are a major barrier to health and well-being in the West Bank.
During the last 4 years, what we had is a crisis in health sector because of the closure. And they divide the West Bank for 302 sectors or two pieces by using 405 checkpoints. What we had after that, they separate the cities and they separate the villages, and now we don't have connection between the city and the village. We don't have connection between West Bank and Gaza Strip. We don't have connection between West Bank and Jerusalem. That means everything is paralyzed. During the closure, for example, we couldn't reach the villages. We couldn't reach the other cities. There was no connection between Nablus and Ramallah. And we get the medicine, for example, from Ramallah because Ramallah became as a center of the West Bank.
One of the most violations that the Israeli occupation are doing is to target the ambulances all the time, either on their checkpoints, I mean on the Israeli checkpoints when they want to pass to the villages or to the other governorates to reach other hospitals, or inside the city itself.
For many, the delay of ambulances waiting at checkpoints means the difference between life and death. Ala Samara is the mother of Ala, a boy who was shot by Israeli soldiers. She says the soldiers blocked off the roads, causing the ambulance to be delayed for over half an hour. This contributed to the death of her son, she says.
I am Ala Hisham Samara, a resident of Jenin refugee camp. I have a kindergarten at my home and young children are usually here, but at the moment it is closed because of my condition after my son's death. My son Ala is a very young child, a polite kid who would come home straight from school and go straight to school. He was on his way to school when he saw the Israeli tank. He stopped to watch the tank and the Israeli military shot him. They wouldn't even let the ambulance reach him for help. At least he might have been badly wounded but not dead. Instead, they dragged him into the middle of the road. They kicked him with their feet and turned him over to make sure he was dead. When they were sure he was dead, they simply dropped him.
Dr. Hanan Atiri says the detention of ambulances is not uncommon.
2 days ago, no ambulance can pass on one of the streets unless they will search it, I mean, even by their weapons. Sometimes they will shoot on the ambulances. So 2 days ago, they made an incursion here to Nablus, and they were searching for some of the casualties, I think, because they know well that they killed 4 or 5 people at the same day, and there are many casualties. So they were searching for those casualties, but they were not allowed any of the ambulances to pass. So they were allowing the ordinary cars to pass, but the ambulances are not allowed unless they will check them, and most of the time they will delay them more than 1 hour.
In addition, Dr. Atiri says medical personnel themselves are targets of the Israeli military.
Let me say it from my personal experiences. I was in one of the ambulances, which was targeted from the Israelis, not by checking or searching the crew personally or the ambulance itself. We were targeted by shooting on us. This incident happened twice with me. The chair that I was sitting in was penetrating by one of the live bullets. And I was lucky that I'm still surviving. They are not even respecting the international laws by giving the chance for the medical staff to do their job. One of my drivers, his hand was broken because they beated him in a tough way. And we have many casualties from our crews just because they are doing their job. So Israeli occupation are targeted and they hindered our work most of the time.
Physicians across the West Bank have been making some creative changes to the way that medical care is provided. For example, Dr. Ghassan Hamdan explains that mobile clinics bring the hospital to the patient rather than expecting the patient to travel to the hospital.
We established a new program trying to adapt our work with the new situation. We established mobile clinic. The mobile clinic is especially for the rural areas. Many times we couldn't go there because the road is stuck by beton stones or by checkpoints and they tell you go back. So we try to use the mountains here, going to these villages, of course with big dangerous. Sometimes they arrest us, sometimes they shoot on us, sometimes they get the medicine from us. So this is how they target medical sector and the medical teams. We have our good medical personnel, we have our good experience, but we don't have the independency, we don't have the normal life, we don't have good condition to do this work because of the Israeli occupation. What we suggest is the most important for us is to have peace here in this area, and this will give us opportunity to do this work freely and to do this work in good way.
Hidayah Najmi was the lead architect working with the United Nations on rebuilding homes in the Jenin refugee camp, destroyed after the Israeli invasion in 2002. As she was celebrating the completion of this task, she herself was cast from her home in one of the Israelis' routine invasions of the city of Jenin.
On Wednesday, maybe, the Israeli forces invaded Jenin. And on the third day, or it will be the fourth day, at between 9 and 10 o'clock at night. We were just watching TV, me and my husband, the kids, and preparing to go to sleep, and just we heard voices in our courtyard. I looked out and there was soldiers all over the place, and they knocked at our house. And we opened the door and say, yes. They said, you have 10 minutes to evacuate this building. I tried to grab our money, our jewelry, anything which is valuable. Some clothes for the kids, and we were just running out of time. Then I heard some shooting outside, and the 5 minutes or the 10 minutes ended, and he just started shooting outside. So we had to run to the car, and we just left our house open, the light on, and everything else, and just we left, and all our neighbors did the same. We are 8 apartments living here, and they are all families with kids, and we just all left.
Najmi, the daughter of refugees from the 1948 Nakba, or catastrophe, when over 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes, says being evicted from one's home has a special meaning for Palestinians.
It has been going on for generation and generation now, and the history of Palestinians to be kicked off their houses, and nobody at all actually is supporting the Palestinian issue, which is the right to Palestinians to go to their homes at least, or to live peacefully and freely like everyone else in the world. Nobody is talking about that anymore.
My name is Atta Jaber. I'm from El Baqa Valley, west of Hebron. The valley is near Kiryat Arba settlement and Har Sina settlement. We live in this land hundreds of years. I born here in this land.
Standing amidst the rubble of 2 destroyed houses, Atta Jaber explains how the Israeli military demolished his house, how he rebuilt it, and how they demolished his house again.
We are standing over the rubble again to Atta Jaber house, the first house. They demolished it in 1998 over there. And you can see the rubble of the second house. So this, the first house, they damaged it two times. So now we are between the two houses. They arrested me for 10 days without reasons. Just they said you are working in Israeli state land and you are staying in Israeli state land. So I live here 35 years or 40 years here in this area. Nobody came and told me this is Israeli state land. After that mean after 27 days, they came and bulldozed the second house and they arrested me for 12 days. I was being in a bad condition and in a bad situation. They broken my back, they beating me. So, and we live 5 months in the tent. You cannot imagine a family with three children or four children is living in a tent during the summer, the hot summer, and they passed 1 month in the winter.
The same military also destroyed the home of Atta's brother, Jody.
The bulldozer and the worker, them cut the trees and the bulldozer, he bulldozed everything. Them didn't care how many years I working. I work all the day, 12 hours. I didn't take half hour break because this is my dream.
Jody Jobbert mourns the loss of his dream. He says that while he didn't have much, the trees were like his children, and he feels their loss deeply.
Yeah, this is a kitchen, their bathroom, and the toilet, and their two rooms. It's not big house, it's a small house. Because I'm a farmer, I didn't have money to build, or I dream all my life about this house. But the bulldozer for the Israeli government, he didn't let me to finish my dream. Because any man, his dream is died, he is died. Or somebody, when he demolished this dream, I think he is died.
Although the Jobber family struggles to piece their lives back together, Atta Jobber insists the solution to this conflict is an easy one.
And to Mr. Sharon also too, if you're believing in the peace and you wanted the real peace, okay, calm down and have a seat with us. And we can discuss this situation, how we can live, how we can move the settlement, how it's not a very difficult situation if you have opening mind and not a closed mind. Calm down, and if you believe in the peace and you are caring about your people, have a seat with us again. Maybe we can find solution for everything and to live in peace, side by side, your government and your people, as we are working, we are going together, a lot of Israel people coming, visiting, sitting, selling, buying, you know, matching each other. No, come to here. Come and have a seat with us. I told him again, don't close your mind. And you kill your people. And you kill the Palestinian people also if you continue this way. This is not the way. We have another kind of way. We have the peace way. And we have the light every day. And we have sun shining every day. Why you work in the dark?
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Sarah Olson. Special thanks to Bishara Constandi, Paul LaRudy, Kate Raphael, Jeff Patterson, Lisa Souza, Jessica Durand, and Max DiOrio.
That documentary was produced by FSRN's Sarah Olson. On Monday, we have another special documentary as we look at one of George Bush's main allies, Australia, and its attack on human rights over the last few years. Please join us then on Tuesday. We'll be back with our regular newscasts. In Berkeley, I'm Deepa Fernandes, and from all of us here at FSRN, we wish you a very happy holiday.